comfort you until it's time. Oh, well, that made me feel better. Not. What's so important about the old world anyway? I asked. Matt and Pacific shared a glance. Then Pacific whispered, It's the only place where you have a chance of defeating Apooch. What? How? My heart drummed loudly. How do I beat a really angry god, especially without my own godly powers? Matt inched back and looked down at the frozen ocean. Water takes many forms. It becomes what it needs to become. You, Zane Obispo, must become what you were meant to become. The old world is the only place you can do that. Why did people always give me vague responses? Why couldn't anyone just provide a straight answer, preferably with a step-by-step diagram? You mean become the storm runner? Pacific slipped off the railing and onto the water's still frozen surface. Yes. But I can't run. How am I supposed to become the storm runner if... I thought about Huracan, about the empty he had created, and anger shook my bones. Why can't he ever tell me anything himself? Why does Huracan always have to send messengers? He's a coward. Shh, Pacific warned, looking around. We've got to get a move on, said Matt, putting his cap back on. We've done our favor. One more thing. I fished the jaguar jade from my pocket. Other than letting me talk to my dad, what exactly does this oldest magic do? I asked. The twin said whoever gives it away can fill it with any power? Pacific tugged on a dreadlock and looked at me expectantly. So who am I supposed to give it to? That's up to you, Pacific said. Chatting time is over, kid, Matt said. It's too dangerous for us to linger. As he stepped into the rowboat along with Pacific, he ran his hand across the icy sea. In a blink, it turned back to liquid and dropped to its normal level. I heard him mutter, If they knew I found you and didn't. He didn't have to finish his sentence. He was expected to kill me on sight. If he failed to do so, he'd be killed himself. I got it. Zane Obispo, the god's public enemy, number one. A curtain of fog rose from the ocean, and I watched as they floated into it. The sea began to churn again, glossy ripples under the moonlight. It was weird to live with death breathing down your neck. It changes your mind and your heart and your choices. Did Brooks feel the same way, I wondered, knowing Ishtab might come for her any time? Zane? I turned as Brooks sat up sleepily, rubbing her eyes. I had the strangest dream. There was thunder and... I met Kukulkan, I cut in. She rocketed to her feet. Where? Here? Why didn't you wake me up? Did you get his autograph? He's going to help us, I said, feeling pretty cool, because Brooks was looking at me with something like admiration. Speed up the currents. Give us some wind. Her look of admiration vanished. You didn't get an autograph. Sorry. Had more pressing things on my mind, fangirl. I teased. Mm-hmm. Why would he help you? He and my dad go way back. Her eyes widened. Of course! She reached into her backpack and pulled out her socks and boots. They worked together to create and destroy. Right. Why couldn't I have been born to the god of leaving everything alone? I looked down at Death's mark on my wrist. The eyelids shifted like before, and I had a creepy feeling they were going to open very soon. Chapter 31 Brooks and I lay on opposite ends of the bench with only our feet touching. I gave her most of the blanket as the winds kicked up, speeding the currents. I closed my eyes and fell into a deep sleep where I dreamed of the strange metal forest like before, but this time there was no Rosie. Only Miss Cab, as a chicken the size of a rhinoceros, hollering, Find his blind spot! A pooch doesn't have a blind spot, I yelled. Then I felt relieved to see her. She was my link to home. How's my mom?
Your mom? You're worried about her when every day I'm becoming more of a chicken? Today I craved birdseed, Zane. Birdseed! You must hurry.
I get it, but I need to know. Is she okay? With an annoyed cluck, Miss Cab said,
If you must know, that fool Ortiz has us under constant surveillance. And when I'm no longer a chicken, I swear I'll...
She let her pending threat die on her chicken lips. Good. The three of them were safe and sound. Now back to Old Puke, I said. Unless you have some secret up your sleeve, you badgering me in my dreams isn't exactly helping. And it really hurt when you jammed your beak into my hand.
Yes, well, you deserve that. I agree that dreams aren't the best way to communicate. Only some of my words are reaching you, and it's quite maddening. But it's all we have.
So what do I do once I'm in the old world?
Kill him.
Great idea.
Zane, I'm a chicken. My legs are chicken legs. My eyes are chicken eyes. My brain? Well, you get the point. I'm not exactly... Did I mention I'm a chicken? And you know who sings out of tune to me every day.
I hoped I'd make it back to tell Mr. O that La Muerte was as powerful as he'd dreamed. He'd be so excited. And Rosie? I asked hopefully. Any word from your friends?
Do I look like your secretary?
The metal trees shimmered with warped images I couldn't make out. Then Ms. Cab squawked.
Time to wake up. Remember the blind spot, Zane. Find it.
There was a terrible explosion, and a cloud of smoke filled the air. I jerked awake, hacking up my lungs. Brooks pulled the blanket over her head and jammed her foot against my leg. Sorry, I murmured, sitting up. Thankfully, the explosion had only been in my dream. The smoke had been replaced with fog so thick it swallowed the sea and the horizon. The sky above was a pale grayish blue. It was impossible to tell for sure, but I guessed the sun was rising. Jazz rushed down from the second deck.
We've made incredible time. See? I told you this boat was amazing.
Are we close? I asked, lowering my voice to avoid another kick from Brooks.
We're here.
This is the old world? That got Brooks up. Her hair was a tangle of knots, and she had dark circles under her eyes. Jazz snorted.
No, this is the entrance.
Blinking, I looked around, trying to see through the mist. Where? I half expected a door or a gate. Brooks was on her knees, peering over the railing. I don't see anything. The boat lurched and stopped suddenly, like a stone wall was blocking our way. Slowly the fog separated and curled into ribbons, creating an image. I held my breath, watching as it took shape. Sleeping eyes, a nose, and a mouth. It looked like an enormous face.
Holy Kay! Brooks cried. What is that?
How do we get through? I asked. Jazz grunted.
The mouth, of course.
Do we need some kind of magic words or something? Brooks said. To get it to open? Jazz frowned, then looked at us with one frantic eye.
Give me something that belongs to each of you. Something with some weight to it.
There wasn't time for questions. Brooks yanked off her boot, muttering something about freezing feet, and thrust it at him. Jazz turned it over in his hand. It's all I could think of, Brooks said. Unless you want a dirty sock. I looked around, grabbed my stupid cane off the bench, and handed it to him. You think it's going to open for a combat boot and a cane? Jazz launched Brooks's boot into the face. Nothing happened.
Just like I suspected,
he mumbled. The fog began to curl again, and the face started to disappear.
Blood for the gods, open!
He launched my cane, smacking the face on the nose. Slowly, the mouth opened, a huge yawn that revealed total darkness inside. You sure this is a good idea? I asked.
You want to get to the old world or not?
Jazz rushed up the stairs and put the boat in gear. We sailed into the mouth silently until we were covered in total darkness.
Jazz?
That was Brooks.
He drew in a sharp breath.
I'm here, kid.
As my eyes adjusted, I said, This is the gateway? My voice echoed like we were in a tunnel, a very cold tunnel that smelled like rotting roadkill. Brooks wrinkled her nose and covered her mouth with her hand. The smell was sickening, like at the dairy farm back home, but mixed with raw chicken decaying in the sun. Then I saw why. In the dark waters below were bizarre-looking eyeless fish, as long as bull sharks and as bloated as pufferfish. Their pale flesh looked half-eaten, and chunks fell off as they slithered through the dark. Whitish foam curdled on the water's surface. Brooks's eyes were wide, trying to cut through the dark.
What do you see, Zane?
Looks like a tunnel. I leaned over the railing. We were surrounded by rusted, corroded metal walls. Or the hull of a wrecked ship. The space was so narrow, I could have reached out and touched the walls if I'd wanted to, which I didn't. Creaks and groans echoed through the cold space. Why is it so awful? I asked, trying to take tiny breaths to avoid the rotten smell.
Hasn't been kept up,
Jazz said, flicking on a flashlight. It looked a lot like the burning flesh kind Brooks had lost in the volcano.
When the new gateways were built, these were forgotten. Death has a way of infesting whatever it touches.
I looked up at Jazz. He was frowning, scanning me like I was some kind of lab rat. Like maybe he'd like to switch on the red beam and burn me up.
What's wrong?
Brooks said. Her face was half hidden in the shadows.
When I got the letter, Jazz began slowly, I thought there'd been a mistake. Then I got suspicious. Why would someone ask me to take them to the old world, a place of the gods?
What are you talking about, Jazz? Brooks asked.
He began to hum that stupid song, The Days Are A-Comin', and a terrible uneasiness rose inside of me.
Only gods can open the old gateways, he said. I'm not a god, and Little Hawk, you're not. So that leaves the two others on board, and something tells me it isn't El Luchador downstairs.
I opened my mouth to say something. What? I didn't know. Brooks shot me a look while Jazz continued to unravel my secret.
Your cane, he said. That's what opened the gate.
How does a cane open an ancient gateway? I asked flippantly, hoping Jazz might hear how crazy it sounded.
By belonging here, Jazz said. By belonging to a god.
I didn't like the way he was considering me with his one eye. This had gotten out of hand. There were too many clues and signs pointing to me as a godborn. And I knew it was only a matter of time before everyone figured it out. I had to get to Apuch, and I had to get there fast. A flash of movement in the water caught my attention. Slowly, like it didn't want us to notice, the dark water began to rise. The foam bubbled and steamed.
Jazz?
I looked over my shoulder at him.
So,
he said, still stuck on me having the power to open the gateway.
What do you have to say for yourself? You some kind of god in disguise? What kind of game are you playing?
Can we talk about that later? Because right now we've got a problem.
Problem?
Looks like the water's rising, I said more calmly than I felt. Jazz's eyebrows shot up. He rushed to the boat's railing, aimed the light, and scanned the sea below. Shadows cast by the pale eyeless fish darted right under the surface. Then he mumbled a few curses and said,
It's even worse than that.
Jazz?
Brooks shouted. The walls are closing in.
Someone's trying to shut this gateway.
Jazz jerked off his vest. We gotta get out.
Get out? Brooks said. How much farther do we have to go?
Is there an emergency exit? I hoped.
Just a few feet, Jazz barked. A few lousy feet.
I didn't have to guess who was closing the gateway. Puke face. Blasted tracker, I should have carved it out of my skin. But I'd been stupid enough to believe he'd be too busy tormenting the twins to care about me. Jazz scrambled up to the deck, shifted the gear so hard the boat groaned in protest. The engine sputtered.
Come on, move! He yelled.
I felt helpless. The water continued to rise. I heard the sound of rusted gears grinding as the walls kept closing in. The air was so thick, it felt like a living thing trying to choke us all.
Zane! Brooks hollered. Do something!
I gave her a panicked but blank look.
Like what? You're the son of...
She threw her hands into the air and shouted,
I don't know, like anything!
I leaned over the edge, willing the water to stay in place. Matt had only traced his hands through the water to get it to do as he commanded. Instinctively, I raised my hand.
Stay!
Okay, lame choice of words. I mean, I wasn't commanding a dog, but it was all I could think of. The water kept rising, rising and rising and rising. My body stiffened. Jazz cursed up a storm as he rushed below decks and returned with an inflatable raft.
Boat's too big to get through. It's gonna get crushed like a sardine can.
He was right. In only a minute or so, the crushing would begin. Jazz raised the raft to his mouth and started blowing. Fortunately, a giant's lungs are big enough to inflate a 4-person dinghy in 15 seconds.
No way I'm getting into that, Brooks said to Jazz. Those monsters will eat right through it.
They only eat flesh, Jazz argued, rubbing his chin. Don't think they like rubber.
Oh, I said with a casual shrug. Well, that makes it a super option.
My wrist began to burn like hot wax was dripping onto my skin. I didn't want to look down. Somehow, I knew that the second I did, everything would change. Drip, drip, drip. Clenching my jaw, I glanced at Apuch's mark. The eyes beneath the eyelids moved back and forth wildly, impatiently. Slowly and painfully, my skin began to tear, as if an invisible razor was slicing it open. I bit back a scream, watching in terror. The eyelids opened. This wasn't just a tattoo. These were real eyes. Black eyes that could see. Now I did scream. A line of blood snaked down my arm.
What is it?
Brooks's voice shook. A deep, dark laugh echoed off the walls.
Ah, Pooch!
I shouted so loud the walls vibrated.
You're a coward!
Where is your father now?
His voice was steady as a thin trail of black mist rose from the slit in my wrist and encircled me.
Zane!
Brooks's wild eyes took me in. I could tell she couldn't hear the god of death. Anger was climbing up my throat now, fast and furious. It burned like lava.
Guys!
Jazz called from the front of the boat, where he'd already loaded Hondo.
Get in!
I hurried over, tugging Brooks along, and made sure she got into the life raft. She looked back, reaching for my hand, but I'd already stepped away. Her eyes glowed like fire.
Zane!
Let them go, Apuch! It's me you want!
I gripped the railing. The corroded walls continued to press in.
Zane!
Brooks shouted again. She was trying to scramble back aboard the boat, but Jazz had a hold of her. She kicked and squirmed.
Let me go!
The dark laugh bounced off the walls. Apuch was enjoying this. The albino fish monsters began to glow beneath the dark water, casting a putrid yellow light through the tunnel. I glanced down at the eyes on my wrist. They were staring up at me. Gods can be in more than one place at a time, Matt had said. I finally understood. Apuch could see me, knew my every move, but not because of some tracking device. These eyes, his eyes, had become a part of me. I gagged.
We're not going without Zane.
Brooks had managed to get free of Jazz and was climbing back onto the boat, which the walls were still crushing.
Why was she so stubborn?
More screeching and grinding of metal on metal. Water splashed over the sides and foam pooled on the deck. The monsters below opened their massive jaws, ready to devour whatever flesh came their way. Everything seemed to be happening in slow motion. Out of the corner of my eye, I could see Brooks coming toward me with awkward strides as the boat tipped dangerously. I dropped to my knees. I knew what I had to do. Brooks was gripping the railing, getting closer and closer. "Stay back!" I hollered at her. But I knew it was useless. She never listened.
"You're strong, Godborn," a pooch hissed, "but not strong enough."
Then an idea struck me. I reached into my pocket and pulled out the jade. Whoever gives it away can give it any power. With an outstretched arm, I tried passing it to Brooks, to give her some kind of control over water so they all could get away. "Take it!" I shouted. Her eyes fixed on it, and I could tell she understood. She lunged, her free hand extended. As our fingers met, the boat lurched forward, forcing me to lose my grip on the stone. It skittered down the deck. Pivoting like a tornado, Brooks went for the jade, but she didn't have enough light to find it. It was gone. The shadowy sea crept up, higher and higher. Like sharks that could smell blood, the monsters gathered with open mouths. I called to Brooks over my shoulder, "Pull me out when I tell you to, okay?"
"Pull? What are you talking about?"
"Just be fast," I hollered. Then to Apooch, I said, "You want me? Then come and get me." And I plunged my wrist into the hungry waters. Chapter 32. It was worse than I'd imagined, like acid burning through my skin. The screams that tore through the tunnel weren't mine, at first. They belonged to the god of death. But it wasn't long before my screams joined his as the monsters ate away at his eyes and my flesh. Brooks grabbed my other arm and pulled me away from the water. I fell back, crashing against the deck. I heard heavy footfalls. Jazz had returned to the boat. The tunnel walls had stopped closing in. I gasped, shivered uncontrollably. I was in shock. Terrible, numbing shock. Brooks's voice was coming at me like she was underwater.
"Zane, what did you do?"
"Zane this, Zane that. Zane, Zane, Zane." At the edge of my mind, I remembered thrusting my arm into the water. I could still feel the monster's sharp teeth. I looked up at Brooks. Her dark hair spilled around her worried face.
"Give me a rag for his arm," she said.
There was a sudden sound of rushing water, and our poor, crunched boat pitched forward with a groan. Soon it felt like we were cruising down a river. The rotten smell had disappeared, which told me we weren't in a tunnel anymore. But the darkness hadn't let us go. My breath evened out, my eyes focused. Terrified of the damage I might see, I squinted at my wound. The skin was raw and bleeding, like the time I'd fallen off the back of Hondo's truck and scraped my knees against the hot asphalt. From what I could tell, at least some of Apooch's mark was gone. I hoped those eyes were history. Jazz shone his flashlight on me while Brooks shoved a rag into my hand for me to hold against my wrist. She cursed under her breath while she prepared a bandage. Jazz had found some gauze in the boat's first aid kit, but it must have been for giants, because it was huge. She tore a strip with her teeth.
"You saved us." That was Hondo.
"Hondo!" I turned to see him kneeling next to me, a smirk sliding across his mouth.
"You're one crazy, stupid, brave kid."
I grabbed hold of him, pulling myself into a sitting position, and hugged him with all the strength I had left.
"I'm sorry," I whispered.
Sure, my flesh might have been dinner for some creepy fish, but I couldn't imagine the pain he had gone through. Other than the dark shadows under his eyes, he looked okay. But that's not what worried me most about him. Sometimes the bruising on the inside is what gets you the worst. Brooks gently took hold of my arm and began wrapping it, first with the gauze, then with a strip of silk lining she'd torn from Jazz's purple vest. It wasn't exactly a cool bandage, because the fabric had tiny pink flowers printed all over it.
"Not so tight," I flinched.
She definitely should never be a nurse. Then I put my hand over hers, and made her look at me.
It was my fault, I muttered, because I knew she was blaming herself for the lost jade. She brushed away a tear and opened her mouth but said nothing.
You're one hell of a hero, running a pooch off like that.
Jazz clapped me on the back, and I wondered if he'd meant to put that much muscle into it, or if maybe it was payback for lying to him.
You saved our lives!
But there wasn't time to celebrate. The real battle hadn't even started, and without the jade, I had nothing to help me. Jazz tried to start up with me.
So, you're a godborn, eh?
Can we talk about that later? Brooks shot him a glare and helped me to my feet. You're okay? Other than the pink flowers?
Zane?
Yeah, I'm fine, I said, forcing a smile. Satisfied I wasn't going to bleed out, she snapped.
You could have lost your arm, you idiot! What were you thinking?
I had to take out his eyes. He could see me, see every move before I made it.
Hanzo gave a short nod of approval. You attacked his weakness. But seriously, dude, that was pretty gross.
So I'd found the first soft spot, Puke's overconfidence, his underestimation of me, and I'd landed a blow. I had to admit, I felt pretty proud of myself, despite the fact that I was going to have a killer scar to remind me of the terrible burning pain from those evil little fish with razor teeth. They had only removed half of Apuch's mark, and now it looked like a regular eyeless skull. But at least he couldn't see me anymore. I went to stand, and that's when I saw my flattened backpack. I must have fallen on top of it. Quickly, I unzipped it and rooted around for Ms. Cab's eye. I didn't have to pull the baggie out to know. I could feel the mush. I'd smashed her eyeball. She was definitely going to kill me, if Apuch didn't do the honors first. The boat pitched. A dim light flickered up ahead. Inch by inch, we floated toward it until the tunnel disappeared entirely.
Whoa!
Hondo turned in slow circles, taking in the gray jungle around us. Brooks drew in a sharp breath, leaning over the boat's edge. Broad trees stretched toward the cloudless sky, their branches drooping with the weight of spider webs that were choking the life from them. It was a strange world, dull like all the color had been drained from it. The trees, the sky, the earth were all different shades of gray. Other than the dried leaves rustling in the slow breeze, the place was as silent as an old graveyard.
It's eerie, I said, not sure what I was expecting.
The old world, Jazz whispered, all awestruck, as if it needed to be named.
Yeah, emphasis on old, as in one foot in the grave. Hondo grimaced.
Place looks dead.
Not dead, Jazz said. Asleep. It has been eternal night here ever since the gods abandoned it.
Two small moons inched across the sky in perfect synchronicity.
Hang on, I said. Apuch gave me until the third moon, but the moons here are always present.
Maybe he meant in our time zone, Hondo said. Brooks blew a stray curl from her face.
Puke doesn't care about time zones. All he cares about is winning.
Good point, Zane. If the moons here never disappear, he could essentially show up any second.
How could she be so calm about this?
Pukeface had told me he needed time to take care of a few things. I hoped that meant things in our world.
How do we know what time it is here?
I asked Jazz so I could figure out the time back home. Jazz smacked his forehead and rolled his eye.
Time? Here? Kid, you've got a lot to learn. Time isn't marked in the old world.
He glanced at the watch on his wrist.
Lucky for you, my watch keeps real-world time, even when I'm here. It's still morning in Cali.
So I had almost a whole day left. Hopefully. I started breathing again. Hanzo craned his neck to see Jazz's massive silver watch with a dozen dials and buttons.
I know a few things about marketing, he said to the giant. Maybe we could become partners.
Then again, I guess your watch probably wouldn't be that popular, considering no one comes here, he added with a shrug. But the other stuff, like that scooter, totally awesome.
Super turbo Jazz, Jazz grunted. I have lots of inventions. Some didn't turn out too well, like the dog collar that was supposed to make dogs fly. Ended up burning off their fur instead. I got sued over that one. Lost half my life savings.
Guys, Brooks interrupted, focus.
The boat bumped up against an embankment of crumbled stone where the river ended.
Time to disembark, Jazz said cheerfully.
But there was nothing cheerful about this sleeping gray place, only a feeling of dread. And the first thought that crept into my head, I don't want to die here. Jazz shouldered a huge pack and stepped off the boat. We all followed. Adjusting his eye patch, he turned to Brooks.
Is now a good time, Little Hawk?
He was asking for her permission to interrogate me, so I cut him off at the pass. Yes, I'm a Godborn, I said. There was no point trying to hide it now. It was like a boat with a leak in the bottom. Pretty soon it would fill with water and sink.
You can't tell anyone, Jazz, Brooks said, hoisting her bag over her shoulder.
Jazz looked offended.
You know giants are the best secret keepers. Next to seers, that is.
Then he narrowed his eye and inched closer to me.
Wait a second. If you're part god...
Uh-oh. He'd figured it out and looked like he was going to blow. Whatever was sleeping here was about to wake up. He clenched his boulder-sized fists.
You're the one who set that masochistic, bloodthirsty monster free!
Hondo stepped between me and the giant, craning his neck to look up at Jazz.
Hang on, he argued. He didn't have a choice. I mean, he did, but not really. Give the kid a break!
Jazz began to shake. A fat green vein throbbed in his neck. Brooks rushed over with a chocolate drink from her pack, which he guzzled, leaving dribbles down his chin.
He did it to save me, Brooks said pleadingly. I would have died if Zane hadn't let him out.
Jazz's gray eye roved between me and Brooks like he was trying to connect more dots. How long would it take for the gods to do the same?
The gods will kill you when they find out, he said finally. No way will they let another godborn live.
Then he let out a loud burp that reeked of onion and dust.
Yeah, so I've heard, I said. But I need to stay alive long enough to kill a pooch.
I'd worry about the gods after that, if there was an after.
You, Jazz smirked. A skinny kid with a
limp,
I finished his sentence.
I was going to say lopsided head, but okay.
Jazz snapped a branch off a tree and handed it to me. I guessed it was supposed to be a walking stick.
Best leave it to the gods, kid,
he went on.
They've got a lot more experience with this sort of thing.
He is a god, Hondo argued, and a hell of a fighter. He can take down a demon runner in his sleep.
I love my uncle, but he wasn't helping my case. Jazz didn't look convinced.
Demon runners are shadows of the gods with none of their magic or power, the giant said. The fact is, we don't know enough about your brand of godborn blood, what it's capable of or not.
He wiped some chocolate off his chin and licked his fingers.
That was the whole reason for the sacred oath, to keep things balanced, orderly. Unless you've got some powers greater than the gods, you need to step aside.
It has to be him, Jazz, Brooks insisted, tugging off her single boot. We can't let anyone else get to our pooch.
I hear an or else in there, Little Hawk.
Or else I die, I said. Or else he becomes a soldier of death, Brooks added, tossing her boot away.
Death would be much better than that.
Jazz shrugged like he was used to hearing this sort of thing all the time.
Whatever. You want to get yourself killed? Be my guest. But don't drag Little Hawk into this any more than you already have, he said.
Then his eye lit up as if something important had occurred to him.
So that's it.
What? I said. What's it?
Your dad, Jazz began. Whoever he is.
He stuck his fingers in his ears.
And don't tell me. The less I know, the better. He wanted you to lure Apooch to this place because he knew that the gods wouldn't look here. Not at first, anyway. He bought you time to do the deed yourself before all the heavens descend on you like vultures. Not sure if that means he likes you or hates you. I guess you could look at it either way.
You sure the gods won't come here? I asked, not sure whether that made me feel better or worse. Jazz started down a shadowy path.
Look around, kid. No one's been here in eons.
Hondo's eyes cut across the pale world. Not exactly a dream destination, he said.
Then, I really need to change out of these threads, but can I keep the suit?
Jazz smirked, and I figured it was safe to ask him about the Spark Striker then.
Lightning Pounder? He said. Yeah, I've heard of her.
Lightning Pounder? That sounded sort of violent.
She strikes lightning into seers, giving them powers. She's all women's lib, trains girl orphans who have nowhere else to go, stuff like that. Don't know what your old man would want with her. I mean, unless he wants her to train you, which there isn't time for.
Right, I said, feeling stupidly small. Why would Huracan send me to an ancient lightning pounder who trains orphan girls? Last time I checked, I wasn't an orphan or a girl. What if this lightning pounder couldn't help me? Jazz grunted.
Let's get a move on, kid. You've got a god to kill.
Chapter 33. Where are we going? Brooks asked, trailing Jazz.
Being a giant has its advantages, like being able to see things from far away.
What did you spot? I asked, trying to keep up and totally failing, even with the walking stick.
You'll see,
Jazz said excitedly. The air was cold and flat. Nothing slithered or breathed or stalked or flew. It was like the place had been abandoned by every living creature, except one that had to be here, the white Spark Striker.
We can't just walk aimlessly, Hondo said after we'd trekked for what seemed like a mile through the dense jungle.
We're not, Jazz said.
He had to duck every so often to avoid slamming his head into a branch.
We're going to Puxical.
Come again, Hondo said. Brooks ran-hopped to keep up with Jazz's enormous stride.
It's Mayan for heart, the center of the old world, Jazz said with his booming voice. A place the gods made together, where they could meet, give counsel, pass judgment, create, destroy. You know, stuff gods do when they've got nothing else to do.
He maintained his pace, swiping at stray branches that were getting in the way.
It's the original place where the first world was dreamed up, and the second, and the third.
He took quick breaths.
The oldest and most powerful magic in the universe was born here. Man, this is going to do wonders for my career.
My mind turned quickly. So Huracan must have been a part of this place, too. He was a creator god, along with Matt. The back of my neck tingled as I thought, this is where it all began. The first magic. It made the place feel sort of sacred. Was Jazz right? Did Huracan want me to come here just because the gods wouldn't? Something felt off about that. But what it was, I didn't know. I followed Jazz, walking in step with Hondo, who was slower than usual, which was the only reason I could keep up.
You have a plan for killing old Puke?
Hondo asked quietly, so only I could hear.
Sort of. Sort of doesn't get you the gold, does it?
I have a plan, okay? I didn't care about gold. I only wanted to take down Apooch and keep him from crushing the whole world. And if I could stay out of Xibalba, that would be super awesome. The wound on my wrist burned and my head throbbed.
Now that you've gouged out Puke's eyes, Hondo continued as we walked, how's he going to find you? Wasn't the whole point to get the stinky one to follow you here?
He knows I'm here in the old world. Trust me, he'll find me, unless I find him first. Brooks fell back and said,
you need to be ready. It could be any time.
The trees parted, and we stepped into a clearing as long as 5 football fields. It was dominated by 5 enormous pyramids arranged in a semicircle. All the structures looked exactly the same. Each had steep staircases, one on each of the three sides that I could see, leading up to what looked like a square temple at the very top. They reminded me of the one Hura Khan had created in the empty, but these were much taller. We walked into the center of the clearing. Jazz stared up at a pyramid in awe and said,
"This here is sacred ground, where the council, the five dominant gods, ruled, created, and destroyed."
His voice caught, and he cleared his throat.
"It's true,"
he whispered.
"What's true?" I asked.
"Each side of each pyramid has 91 steps, making 364 total.
Wow, he could count fast. Maybe it was a giant thing. He continued,
"When you add in the step taken to enter the temple at the top, the total comes to 365.
"The number of days in a year," Brooks said, catching on.
"So the gods can count," Hondo said impatiently. "Congrats." "This is how the marking of time came to be," Jazz declared. "It was invented in this place. The legend says that the gods competed for seats here. That's how the council was formed. Each temple represents a different god of the council. Nakon, god of war, and Ishtab, she's running Shabalba these days. Then there's Hura Khan, god of storms."
My breath caught in my throat. Jazz went on.
"Ishtakau, goddess of chocolate. I think she overthrew another goddess, maybe Ishel. She was the goddess of healing, didn't like fighting. And then there's Alom, god of the sky."
"So these gods made themselves kings?" I said.
"And queens," Brooke said. Jazz was still smiling.
"Then one, no one knows who, created time. And the world began, or at least the third version of it. Man, I wish I had a camera."
So Pacific had one spin on the council, before the gods got rid of her and she was wiped from history. Brooks gazed up.
"Some say the gods lost the time rope. It used to be wrapped around the earth, but it disappeared, and now they can't time travel anymore."
"Seems like a pretty big thing to lose," Hondo said, shaking his head.
"Did you say time travel?"
Jazz yawned wide.
"I'll make a camp at the edge of the jungle. We all need some rest, since any moment could be..."
He looked at me.
"You know, kill time and all that."
"Shouldn't we be looking for the spark striker?"
My insides were in knots.
"You need rest and sustenance, kid," Jazz said. "Besides, no one finds old Sparky."
He pulled magically heated pizza pockets and also bags of gummy worms out of his pack and passed them around.
Was this all Giant's aid? I wondered.
"I'll keep first watch," Hondo said, chomping his pizza pocket. "Hey, speaking of watch, does yours have Wi-Fi?" Jazz shook his head sadly, like he was bummed he hadn't thought of that.
"But I've got a log that burns for 18 hours.
He fished it out of his bag.
"Oh! And we might need these."
He passed each of us a demon-tormenting flashlight. So he was Brooks's supplier.
"What are we watching for?"
Brooks wiped some crumbs from her mouth.
"We'll smell Apooch before we ever see him."
"Have to look out for other gods, too, just in case," Jazz said. "Gotta make sure your boy here gets to Apooch first."
Brooks's cheeks reddened.
"He's not my boy," she muttered.
"I need to change the subject, fast. Anyone have any leftover pizza pockets?" I said, polishing off the last of my own cardboard-like meal. "This stuff's great, Jazz. Good thinking to bring it."
Brooks lay back and covered her face with her arms. "How about you all stop talking so loud? We might as well put up a neon sign telling the gods where we are."
For the next couple of hours, my mind reeled. It reeled while we sat around the fire, and it reeled while Jazz thundersnored and Brooks and Hondo slept. P.S. Hondo was supposed to keep first watch, but I guess the guy was still getting over the whole poison meatball thing. I changed out of my suit and into my jeans and T-shirt, definitely better for godfighting, and stared up at the twin moons inching across the starless sky, wondering if I'd ever get to see Huracan again now that I'd lost the jade. My wrist burned, my short leg throbbed, and I couldn't help wondering how a skinny kid with one good arm and one good leg was ever going to beat the god of death, darkness, and destruction. But Huracan had sent me here for a reason. Find the white spark striker. Except Jazz had said that wasn't possible. So what was I supposed to do? Sit around and wait for the lightning pounder to invite me to dinner? Images of ancient wars, supernatural creatures, angry gods, and old magic spun through my mind, and all the while I kept thinking, is this real? How could it all be real? The night dragged on, heavy and dark. I tried to psych myself up, convince myself that I was braver than I really was. But to be honest, I was scared. Scared and outmatched. I wished Rosie were here, so I could scratch her head and listen to her soft breathing. But I knew she was somewhere she didn't want to be either, and it tore me up to think she was scared too. Somehow, I drifted to sleep. I was jostled awake by a scratching sound. Rosie? I thought sleepily. I turned over on the hard ground, my sweatshirt balled under my head for a pillow. There it was again, like a very light foot stepping on twigs at the edge of the tree line a mere 15 feet away. I sat up and peered into the dark. A masked figure stood in the shadows, staring at me. Chapter 34. The figure wore a long red robe, and its matching mask was smooth and flat with only slits for eyes and a mouth. And at its side was a stone axe. Replace the red with black, and the axe with a scythe, and you'd have the Grim Reaper. Crap! Slowly, carefully, I rolled to my feet. My chest was as tight as dry leather. I wasn't sure what to do. Walk over casually and start a conversation? Hey, creepy red mask, are you the Sparkstriker? What brings you out this time of night? Okay, bad option. So I waited, unmoving and staring, but definitely trembling. The sky was as black as Apuch's eyes, which made everything dark except for the fire. The figure lifted the axe and with a single thrust slammed it into a tree. I recoiled as the blow rang out through the forest. Jazz, Hondo, and Brooks kept sleeping like hibernating turtles, which was pretty amazing considering it had sounded like someone had taken a giant sledgehammer to church bells. The tree vibrated and hummed like a guitar string. Its cobwebs trembled, falling from the branches and trunk to reveal. I blinked. It was like in my dream, a metallic tree, and in it I saw my warped reflection. Tall kid with a left lean, messy dark hair, square shoulders, and wide-set eyes that looked afraid. Definitely not the guy you'd bet on to take down the god of death. But you want to know the weird thing? My reflection had something in his hand. Not a cane, but something else. I couldn't quite make it out. Flakes began to fall from the sky, slowly twisting to the ground. I caught some and smudged them between my finger and thumb. Ash. I looked up. There was a hairline crack running across the black sky. What did that mean? Was this world going to fall apart like the twins' world had? I took a step closer to the masked figure, and just as I did, it darted away. I went after it. And you know what I was thinking the whole time? I really shouldn't be chasing this thing. Shouldn't. He, she, it was quick. I tried my best not to fall behind. Every once in a while, my short leg would make me stumble and I'd fall, landing on sticky cobwebbed leaves. Then the figure slowed and looked over its shoulder like it wanted to make sure I was following. Was this some kind of trap? Hey! I called, getting to my feet for the third time. Who are you? A girl's voice bounced off the trees. Pick up the pace, Obispo. How did she know who I was? I already didn't like her. We came to a small glade. She stopped about 10 feet away, keeping her back to me. I was glad for the chance to catch my breath. Are you the Sparkstriker? I huffed, bent over with my hands on my knees. Fortunately, I remembered in time something Jazz had told me while we were walking to Puxical. No one can look at her face without their eyes burning out of their head. I heard a grunt sigh, then she turned and asked, "Do I look like the Spark Striker?" "I wouldn't know," I said honestly. "I don't know what the Spark Striker looks like." "And you don't look like a hero or a god, Obispo." With a shrug, I said, "How do you know? Do you know a lot of heroes or gods?" "If you're going to be a warrior, you better learn to listen. You got it?" Then she went silent. Was I supposed to be listening for something? After a minute or so, I got bored of her little game and said, "So?"
"So what?"
"Are you the Spark Striker?" I asked impatiently.
"I'm nobody."
"Fine, nobody," I said, emphasizing the last syllables. "Do you know where I can find the..."
"You're the hero, Obispo," she cut in.
Her hand went to her mask.
"You tell me where the Spark Striker is."
This girl was seriously annoying. Slowly, she began to peel the mask back, but before I could see her face, she transformed. Shifted the way Brooks did. But this girl didn't turn into a hawk. She became a giant eagle with a broad white chest speckled with chocolate spots, golden-flecked brown eyes, razor-sharp talons, and a wingspan of 20 feet. She let out a loud cry, then took off into the night.
"Wait!"
I called after her. "Why bring me all the way out here just to fly away?" I rushed over to the mask she dropped, picked it up, and hollered into the dark.
"You forgot your mask, nobody!"
It was a flimsy thing made of thinly woven silk, so plain most people would toss it in the trash. Two bits of screen-like material covered each eye. I looked guiltily around the small glade, feeling like I was doing something wrong, and tried the mask on, praying it wouldn't melt my face. Nothing happened. No face melting. No magic. No superpowers. Nothing cool. I tugged it off and stuffed it in my back pocket. That's when I noticed flecks of shimmering cobwebs floating to the ground. I looked up to see a massive tree. My eyes traced the trunk down to thick, gnarled roots that snaked through the dark. They led to a giant hole in the ground where I thought I saw a glint of light. I went to the edge and dropped to my knees to get a better look. About 50 feet down, there was a pool of water surrounded by tall stone walls. Beneath the surface were flashing lights, sudden bolts of energy that made the water ripple and sizzle and steam. "What the heck?" I muttered in amazement. Next to the pool was a cave opening where sparks were flying out in bursts. After each flash, I heard the sound of metal clashing against metal. My curiosity was definitely piqued, and the thick rope on the ground near my feet looked like an invitation. It was tied around the tree's trunk. There was a narrow edge around the pool that I could follow to the cave if I could get down there. That was a big if. I gave the anchored rope a quick tug, testing its strength. My left wrist still burned and ached. Could I descend with the strength of only one arm? What if I fell? It was a long way down, and who knew what was in that glowing water? My palms were sweating.
"Put on the mask, stupid!"
I looked up to find Nobody the Eagle circling the pit.
"I was going to!"
I lied as I jerked it free and placed it over my face. What was so great about this mask anyway? It's not like it did anything, except to make my face feel sticky and hot. I said a couple of Hail Marys, then gripping the rope with my good hand and looping it around my wrist for a stronger hold, I belly scooted down over the ledge until my feet were planted against the stone wall below. Okay, so far, so good. 1 inch at a time, I made my way down the wall, grasping the rope so tight it burned my palm. My arm muscles screamed. The eagle continued circling above. I could feel little puffs of air every time she flapped her wings. So obnoxious.
"Maybe I'll catch you if you fall," she said. "If I'm fast enough, on second thought, you better not fall."
I tried to ignore her annoying voice as I slowly rappelled down,
and a couple minutes later, I made it to the pool's edge. Gingerly, I picked my way toward the mouth of the cave. Light crackled and sizzled under the water. Maybe there were a bunch of electric eels down there. I headed straight for the cave. Chapter 35. First things first, there was a woman in the cave. Second, she was short, as in shorter than my mom. She wore a red robe like nobody's and stood on a rickety wooden stool with her back to me. In her hand was a hefty, no, make that huge, stone hammer that she was pounding into something I couldn't see from where I stood. Sparks flew. I ducked as one sailed over my head and into the pool.
"Better get out of the way," she said with a grunt. Slam.
Another whiz of light. "You're the spark striker." She had to be. I couldn't believe I'd found her. Okay, so maybe nobody wasn't too bad after all. Then I remembered I was wearing that stupid mask. When I went to take it off, the woman said,
"I wouldn't do that if I were you. Could be calamitous."
What? Did she, like, have eyes in the back of her head? You mean bad?
I mean this light will fry your eyes out of your sockets.
Definitely left the mask on. Her red hair was all ratted out like a nest, and there were teeny tiny silver trinkets, bells, woven into the knotted strands. She turned to me. Her face was uneven in places where it shouldn't have been. Her nose was bent a little too far to the right, and her right eye sagged an inch below her left. Her forehead had a lump in the center that looked like a giant mosquito bite.
"I thought you'd never get here," she said.
You're the..."
"Yes, yes," she said impatiently. "Now hurry over here so I can make sure this fits."
"Fits?" She rolled one of her eyes. The other one stayed in place like it was glued there. When I drew closer, I peered down at the stone table she was working from. It looked like it could double for a body slab. Right in the middle was a cane. And I'm not talking any cane. I'm talking ninja-style hammered silver with a jade grip. I'm talking the kind of cane that looked cool. Like if you saw me walking down the street with it, you might stop and ask me where you could get one too.
"Well, don't just stand there. Pick it up."
She shook her head, but strangely, the tiny bells didn't ring. As I reached for the cane, it started to hum. Then, when I closed my fingers around it, the thing went silent. I don't remember exactly, but I think I was holding my breath because it felt like a really big moment. Like whatever happened next would matter a lot. Carefully, I picked up the cane. It was light as air and felt warm to the touch. I could swear it pulsed in my hand. I set its tip on the ground, turned, and took a step with it. The cane was incredible. "Wait a sec. That can't be right," I thought. My limp was... it was gone. My eyes bugged out and my heart rolled over. Then a slow smile spread across my face.
"A few more steps," she said, eyeing me as I took another turn.
I seriously could have cruised around like this all day. "How... it's amazing."
"Of course it is," she said. "It's more than it appears. It's also a spear and will do as you command."
I inspected it more closely while she went on about its magic. "How do I turn it into a spear? Is there a hidden button or something?"
"Do you tell your legs to walk? Your arms to move?"
Was that a real question? She snorted and added,
"It's connected to you now. I've pounded it with lightning, bound it with old magic, and infused it with the blood of the gods. Or more specifically, your father's blood. It's indestructible, Zain Obispo."
"My father's blood?"
"First time he's ever given a drop," she said. "Mighty powerful stuff, too, considering he's the creator god."
"Sorry, Matt, I'm totally sure she meant you, too."
"Now for the grand finale," she said.
Go choose a bolt.
I looked around the little cave for the first time. The rocky walls jutted out sharply, making the tight space feel even tighter.